We've been telling you this morning about the Loyola Project. It's a documentary about the 1963 Loyola Ramblers. Patrick Creedon is the director, and the narrator on that is Lucas Williamson, who, of course, has been one of the star players for the Ramblers for 4 years now. Patrick and Lucas, guys, welcome to the show. You're on WGN.
Hi, John. Thanks for having us.
That's Patrick and Lucas. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Lucas, I'm going to say hello to you, then I'm going to talk to Patrick a little bit more. Chime in as you must, but or as you like, but I just wanted to tell you what a pleasure it's been watching you play the last 4 years, and what great work as a student athlete you did on this documentary. I know a little bit about narrating things, Lucas. You did an excellent job.
Thank you. That means a lot. Especially coming from you.
What are your plans right now, Lucas? You going to play ball? You going to go into broadcasting? What's next for you?
Yeah, I want to play basketball for as long as I can. So the next thing would be signing an agent and just figuring it out from there.
Is the NBA going to happen for you? Are you going to maybe head to Europe? Do you know?
You know, obviously the NBA, I mean, that's the dream that I've always dreamed of since I was a kid. So, I mean, I'm going to give it a shot.
Did you come up with this idea, or how is it then, Lucas, that you got to be the narrator of this documentary?
It was actually Patrick's idea. Obviously, like, you know, going to Loyola, I knew about the 63 team, but the extent of my knowledge is probably I knew that they had the game of change, the game where Mississippi State, they had to, like, figure out, like, and basically, like, do Mission Impossible to get to the game.
Yeah.
And then I knew they won a national championship. But that was pretty much the extent of my knowledge. And so when Patrick took on the project, and as he was, you know, figuring or he was learning more the details, he actually came to me and said, you know, Lucas, you actually have a lot to do with the story, a lot of things in common with Jerry Harkinson specific. Do you want to give the narrator thing a go? The movie just sounds better when the narrator kind of has something to do with the story.
Yeah.
And I said,
you said,
yeah,
yes.
I said, you know, I just didn't want to mess it up, and I'll give it a go.
Yeah. Your observations do add a lot to the show. And Patrick, tell us the story then of the 63 team. What is this movie about?
The movie's about, building the best team you can, and then getting everyone to root for your team. I know that sounds really simple and dumbed down, but that's really what it's about. In 1963, coaches were not allowed to play their best team if some of their best players were black. In fact, the unwritten rule at the time was that you could play three black players, but not four. It wasn't written anywhere, but that was the rule that coaches followed. George Ireland, this kind of mercurial Irish coach, he's a Notre Dame grad. He coached Loyola for years. He was in jeopardy of losing his job because the team wasn't really playing very well.
Yeah.
So he decided, I'm going to put the best team on the court, even if it means that four of the starters are black, and we'll deal with the consequences.
Yeah,
that's basically the foundation of the story that we told.
Sort of where it starts. They hung him in effigy outside his office on campus at Loyola, not because he was playing black players, but because he wasn't winning enough. That's how rabid the fan base was, right?
Exactly. And isn't it ironic that hanging him in effigy,
yeah,
was very traumatizing for him and his family. We interview his daughter in the film. Yet at the same time, to be honest, there were people who were still being lynched in America in 1963, for real, not in effigy. And so there's so many things in this story that make it an American story. It's about Loyola basketball, and it's about the city of Chicago. But it's really about our country and where we were then and where we are today.
The footage you have of the team in the 60s is really spectacular, too. I'm glad it's been preserved and you were able to integrate it into the film, because you see how slow, dull, boring, mechanical the game was. And then Loyola had a different style of play. Lucas, describe that. What is the Loyola style of play versus the traditional play?
Yeah, I think the 63 team, like, they really revolutionized basketball. I mean, and in the movie, there's a specific part section of the movie that talks about how exactly they changed the game. They played like a run and gun, similar to today's type basketball, which was unprecedented back then. I mean, they, you know, they were scoring in the hundreds in the 90s, you know, just blowing teams out of the gym because of how fast that they played. So like the transition baskets, the quick shots, I mean, that was unheard of back then. I mean, they didn't have a shot clock back then. So teams just held the ball and held the ball until they got the perfect shot. Ireland said, basically, we're going to just run teams out of the gym and we're going to be shooting layups before they could even set their defense in transition.
Using the natural skills and athleticism of the players, unleashing them and letting them run and gun. So the movie, though, works in the direction of this national championship, Patrick. Talk about the complication for the team playing in the national championship, or for that matter, in the South.
Yeah, it, you know, it was one thing to play in Chicago and to play in the North, let's say, where the unwritten rule was maybe not as vigorously enforced, let's say. But when they travel down to New Orleans or they travel down to Houston, they really ran into problems. And so, you know, when they played in New Orleans in 1963, when they showed up, the local fans were not psyched. Same with Houston. They felt really threatened by the fact that this unwritten rule was being broken and that there were so many black athletes on the court. There's a specific nuance to all this that I think is really important to note. The year before George Ireland broke the unwritten rule, another team did it. Cincinnati and a coach named Ed Jucker won the national championship in 1962 with four black starters. Here's the difference. He didn't experience the same kind of pushback that George Ireland and the Ramblers did. And I think the reason for that is that Cincinnati played a really slow, traditional style of play. It was Loyola's style of play, combined with the fact that they were breaking the unwritten rule, that got people angry and that scared people. Yeah. There was a sense that our game of basketball is being taken away from us. And that's why George Ireland faced, and the players, faced the hate mail. They faced the death threats, and they faced all the complications that they experienced during the 1963 season.
Letters were written to the team that were so awful that the coach wouldn't share them naturally with the players. But even to this day, the family doesn't want you to see the letters. Is that right, Patrick?
Yeah, that's right. And it's troubling to me, frankly. Jerry Harkness, before he died, you know, during the making of the film, I saw a lot of that mail. None of the players had ever seen the mail, except for maybe one or two pieces of mail that got to their dorm room. But beyond that, there were about 500 pieces of letters that none of the players had ever seen, even to this day. Well, once I saw them and saw that a lot of the mail was addressed to the players, not to the coach, but it was addressed to Jerry Harkness, Ron Miller, Jack Egan, et cetera.
Yeah.
The players, you know, understandably said, we want to see our mail. That's our mail. That's not your mail. We want to see our mail. And the family is uncomfortable doing that. They don't want to show the letters, even the letters that were addressed to the players. That's just very troubling to me, John.
Put aside the
legality of it. It's against the law to hold someone else's mail, but there's just I don't know. It speaks to the complications around race in our country that exists today.
Well, and the double standard that clearly existed then. We'll root for these guys, but we're also going to limit these guys. It's 11:28. Let's do this. I need to pause for the news here, fellas. If you can just give me a few more minutes. The culmination of this story takes place still later in the film, and it is the story of the Mississippi State game and the national championship game. And that's the thing that is so startling, that Landecker refused to even mention it on the air. He said, you have to see the movie just to see how this plays out. But it's history, and I think we can look behind that curtain.
American higher education was overwhelmingly segregated. Your student body is 98% white. The faculty is 99% white. The alumni are 99.5% white. How many black guys can you put on the floor to represent this lily-white institution before you're going to run into blowback? How far could they go?
Talking with Patrick Creedon. I'm John Williams. He is the director of the Loyola Project. You can find out more at theloyolaproject.com. It's a one-hour version of the documentary that's going to air on the CBS television network and stream on Paramount Plus on April the 2nd. I think the time is noon, our time, is when it's going to be broadcast on CBS and, I guess, stream on Paramount. And it's the story of the 1963 Loyola Ramblers. And as Patrick Creedon mentioned just a moment ago, it's not just a basketball movie. It's a story about America. It's a story about the race issues that the Loyola Ramblers had to work through. And the narrator is Lucas Williamson, who's been the star of the team, one of the stars of the team for the last 4 years, hopes to play in the NBA someday. But if nothing else, he's got a career in broadcasting as a really thoughtful narrator of this show. I asked the guys to stick around for just a couple more minutes because I wanted to just tell a couple of other chapters of this story. Patrick, you're still there, right?
I am.
And Lucas, we've still got you on the line too, correct?
I'm still here.
Yeah, I appreciate just another minute or two of the time from each of you. Incidentally, our texts are coming in. Somebody from 630 said, this is a great movie. I saw it at Fenwick. Would love to see a film about the Mississippi State team because that was intriguing. And let's just talk about that Mississippi State game for just a minute, Patrick. So the Loyola Ramblers go to the South, not to say that they didn't have their own race-based issues in Illinois and in Chicago, but they go to the South and they play Mississippi State. Talk about that game for a minute and what led up to it.
Yeah, I'd love to. And by the way, one thing I wanted to point out, John, along with being the narrator of the film, Lucas is also a co-writer of the film. And that's an important distinction. And the reason being is Lucas's perspective as a young black athlete and as the captain of the Loyola Ramblers, it's exactly the perspective that Jerry Harkness had. And it was important for us to understand Jerry at a really deep level.
Jerry,
and Lucas allowed us to do that.
One of the players on the team. I didn't realize that you were one of the writers, Lucas, but you know where I almost caught my breath was, and you'll remember the scene, Lucas, is when you guys did the Zoom call and we see the squares of all the players talking about it. I thought, what a great moment that must have been for you guys with the coaches to just talk about this team's legacy. You remember that, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. And obviously, like, especially before COVID, the 63 team guys, they were always around. And we always talked, but we never talked about specifically about, you know, race relations and the things that they had to go through. So in facilitating that conversation with Patrick, I gained new perspective on a lot of those guys, a lot of the things that they went through. It was fascinating to me because some of the things that they went through off the court, they say it in a way that's so like, it's like almost nonchalant. Like, that's just how it was back then. And, you know, me looking back on it with the lens of from 2022, it's like, I can't imagine, you know, going through that, you know, feeling like the way that they felt off the court, you know, even on campus. And then, you know, having to go to school, then having to play at a high level, but not really, not just compete at a high level, but go out and win a national championship. I mean, that it had to be such a huge mental strain on those guys. Yeah. And for them to just simply say, hey, that's just the way it was back then is just, you know, that's fascinating.
It is amazing that they were so matter-of-fact about it. Well, yeah, we couldn't get our hair cut there because they wouldn't let blacks get their hair cut there. And this is across the street from the campus. And you just think, well, then why didn't you – where was the outrage? And I'm sure there was plenty of it, but it was also the life they were living. They couldn't fix it right then and there. So they played basketball and managed. And it does take you aback a little bit, for sure. Patrick, back to the Mississippi State game.
Yeah, basically, Mississippi was really kind of ground zero for the racial, the racist policies in the country. There was a governor there named Ross Barnett, and he felt very strongly that black kids and white kids should not play together. They shouldn't go to school together. They shouldn't compete against each other. None of that should happen. There was a zero tolerance. And so when Mississippi State won their conference that year, they had earned the right to play in the NCAA tournament. And governor said to them, like he had done a couple of years previously, he said, congratulations on a wonderful season. You are not playing in that tournament.
You mean if in the brackets, Mississippi State's matched up against Loyola, then they'd forfeit the game rather than play?
Exactly. Can you believe that? I mean, they earned the right to play for a national championship, and the governor said no.
The governor, like he's the decider. Okay, welcome to 1963 in the United States of America. So what did they do about that?
So after turning down invitations two of the previous three seasons, the players and the coach had had enough. And as Lucas alluded to earlier, they've pulled off this Mission Impossible thing where half the team went to one airport, the other half of the team went to another, and if half of the team got arrested, the other half would fly off to East Lansing where that game was going to get played, and at least six of them would turn up to play. That's what they did. So what's really amazing about that is, you know, the Mississippi State team, they were wonderful allies in that moment. That was their opportunity to say no. And that was their opportunity to risk getting arrested and getting thrown into jail when they got back home. But they wanted to compete. They felt like, we have a chance to win this thing. We're not going to sit at home on our hands. We're going to sneak out of the state, go to East Lansing and play Loyola, which is what they did. Loyola ended up winning. But for Mississippi State, that was a moment that none of them will ever forget. There's one great detail about that. They weren't really sure how the local crowd would treat them when they walked onto the court. They didn't know if people were going to boo them or be like, get out of here, go back to Mississippi, you guys. When they walked out onto the court, one of the local bands had learned their fight song and played the fight song for them as they stepped onto the court. And they knew in that moment that there were people supporting them up in Michigan that wanted them to do what they had done. It was a really heroic moment and a wonderful detail in this much larger story about the 63 Ramblers.
You talk about the courage of the black kids, but the courage of the white kids from Mississippi to defy Jim Crow and go up to Michigan and play against these black kids was a leap for them. And I think there were two goosebump moments in the documentary about that. One was at center court, the opening tip, the handshake of a black hand clasping a white hand was, I got chills. You all even drew a cartoon of it, if you will, but then we actually saw the moment, and that was profound, you guys. That was great storytelling.
Yeah, thank you. No, it's a beautiful story. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's a basketball movie. And, you know, if you're from Chicago, the good guys win. I don't want to give away too much, but it's a great sports story. But there's so much more to it, which is why this has been such a satisfying project for all of us. Okay. It's really been a joy for us to work on this story.
So then Mississippi State loses. Then they got to go back to Mississippi State. And the ruse is exposed now. So there's a crowd waiting for them at the airport. And I thought, oh, here comes hell to pay. They get off the plane. Lucas, pick it up from here. When they get off that plane and walk onto the tarmac, what's waiting for them?
Yeah, I mean, talk about, you know, the anxiety that you must feel like flying in and not knowing whether or not you're going to, you know, police officers ready to take you off to jail, or You know, what they actually saw was, you know, a crowd of people that, you know, like gave them a standing ovation as they got off the plane, that they, you know, had the courage to go out and compete. Because, you know, and in the film, it touches on this, you know, they just wanted the opportunity to compete, even though they went out and they ultimately lost the game, but they still had the opportunity. Without the opportunity, they would have had nothing. So I think, you know, the fact that they had the courage to do what they did and then see the results of, you know, everybody else that they that ended up supporting them, that definitely helped and made them rest at ease that they had, they made the right decision.
That's Lucas Williamson, who is the co-captain of the Loyola Ramblers and was the narrator and co-author of this movie, which you'll be able to see on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus April 2nd. The movie's called The Loyola Project. You can find out more about it at theloyolaproject.com. Patrick Creedon's been visiting with us, too, the director of the movie. Okay, Patrick, thank you.
Thank you, John.
Yeah, well done. And what's the next project for you, Patrick?
We're going to be doing this for a while. You know, there are 42 states right now that are pushing legislation to make it illegal to talk about our history with race. You know, wherever those laws get passed, this film would be illegal to show in those states. That's not okay with us. That's not okay with Lucas. And we're going to be traveling. The film is traveling around the country now at college campuses and high schools all over the place. And we're going to be doing this for a while.
Well done, fellas. We'll continue to follow your journey then. Thank you for telling the story, Patrick. And Lucas, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.